As always, Truth with Consequences is brought to you by patreon.com/RussoCoon, TWC, the only place where you can get this show days early on video, plus bonus shows, all kinds of crazy stuff. Go to patreon.com/RussoCoon, TWC, and of course, shirtsoftruth.com. That's where you get our cool shirts, all kinds of stuff. Represent the podcast, represent the Blackballed Podcast, and if you're not down with Truth with Consequences, we got two words for you. Truth with Consequences. Vince Russo, last week we did Montreal Screwjob. It is, I don't know if you know this, but it is by far, in the first 2 days, the most downloaded show we've ever had, and it just keeps growing and growing. Isn't it weird to you that this thing that's been talked to death is still so popular?
Oh, God, it really is, Matt. And like I kept saying over and over and over, like even when I was promoting the show, I kept saying the last word, the last word, the last word, because I want it to be the last word. I know it's not the last word. I don't know why I want it to be the last word. But Matt, let me tell you what I did. I'm going to tell you something that I did. I think you'll get a kick out of this. And you want to talk about money and ratings? Let's talk about money and ratings. Okay, bro. I DM'd the guys with the Dark Side of Wrestling, okay? And I said, I got a great idea for you guys, because they told me, Matt, what happened was the guy told me when he was DMing me, they shot 8 episodes, okay? He said to me, Vince, when we were pulling out of your driveway, we found out, they gave us a call that our 8 episodes were cut down to 6. And one of the episodes that got pulled was the Brawl for All. And, bro, I'll be honest with you, Matt. I wasn't mad, disappointed. I would have loved the publicity. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, I got to be honest with you. When they did that topic with me, like, I was like, man, I don't – like, that – I don't think that's an interesting topic. Like, I just would not have picked Brawl for All. So, like, when he said that to me, it wasn't like, oh, man, are you kidding me? It was like – well, you know what, bro? It probably was the weakest one, you know? So he said, you know, now with the success of the 6, they're trying to go another season. Matt, you know what I pitched to them? If they want freaking ratings and they want – you know what I pitched to them, Matt? And I said, I'm raising my hand. I am the first one in line. You know what I pitched to them, Matt?
What's that?
When you have people on your show – okay, bro, you got to make this a prerequisite, because, bro, they paid me. So, you know, they paid you. This was a professional. They came to my house. They had the lighting, the whole 9 yards, bro. So they did this in a professional manner. And I said, guys, here's the prerequisite going forward if there's a season 2. You ready, Matt?
Go ahead.
Everyone you interview, hook them up to a lie detector test. I said, bro, I am telling you right now, I will do that without a shadow of a doubt, bro. I am raising my hand. Hook everybody up to a freaking lie detector test. And I said to them, I said, here's the first thing that will happen. You will have so many people back out. It will, your head will spin. But I'm trying to tell them, guys, you have to understand, you're working with con men, you're working with liars, you're working with workers. If you really want to get the truth and you want the people to know the truth, you got to freaking hook these people up to lie detector test. And I'll be the first one to do it. And I extend that to Table for Three. The WWE show. Freaking put me on. I'm telling you, bro, you can wire me up. Will everybody else say the same thing, bro? You know how many people would back out if they said, okay, bro, we're going to interview you. We're going to pay you X amount of dollars, but we're going to hook you up to a lie detector test. You know how many freaking people would back out of that, Matt?
Everybody who thought they weren't telling the truth. So that'd be interesting. And I heard you talk about that on Twitter, I think, about the lie detector. I think it's a solid idea, Vince. I think it's pretty awesome.
I don't know why nobody does it. Why doesn't anybody do it? I mean, do it.
Well, I think as soon as you tweeted that, my wheel started spinning to do our own lie detector episode where fans would submit their questions and just have you do it. And then you could say, I did it. why can't you guys?
Yeah, I'll do that. I have no problem doing it.
You know, this is a moment I think that will go down in history because I think it's great, and I think there's a way to do it that will generate more listeners for TWC. I think it's fantastic, and we'll talk about it off air and figure out how to make it work. But we've heard you guys, and you know, we know you liked Montreal. Something around the same time that was happening is what we're going to talk about today, and that is DX, D-Generation X, and just the beginnings of it and how it started. When you look at DX and its legacy, you know, you see certain members get in the Hall of Fame and all that kind of thing. How much ownership in your heart or pride in your heart do you have about contributing to this memorable faction?
See, you know, man, again, here's like, you know, whatever I say, it's a freaking lie. Bro, the seed of DX. Do you know where the seed of DX came from? I have, again, I wish I could say, oh, bro, Matt, the seed from DX came from Vince Russo. Matt, do you know where the seed of DX came from?
Was it Shane McMahon?
No, Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon. And let me tell you how it happened, bro. Matt, yeah, I'm going to start. You know, we had the lead up with, you know, I will always give Eric Bischoff credit where credit is due. Bringing in Scott and bringing in Kevin, you know, to WCW, and the way they did it was genius. I'm sure Kevin and Scott had a lot of input. I'm sure Eric had a lot of input. The way they did it, it was genius. So the tease was they were teasing a big hitter. So now there's all this anticipation. Bro, I was at Bruce's house watching this pay-per-view. And this is the time, bro, when Bruce and Cornette were writing the television. I was like the third wheel, keeping my mouth shut, trying to learn. And I was literally at Bruce's house when Hogan came out. And Matt, I'll never forget, I did not say this to Bruce. I would not say this out loud, but my reaction was, we're effing dead. Like, we are so freaking dead. This is the coolest and the hottest thing I have seen in wrestling in decades and decades and decades. Keep in mind, at the time, we're doing T.L. Hopper, The Goon, Freddie Joe Floyd, who, you know, it was all that stuff. And I did not say it out loud to Bruce, you know, because he was, you know, more or less the head writer of the show. But I was saying to myself, bro, like, we are freaking dead. Okay. That's when, bro, I was so soured on the WWE and them just, you know, being stuck in the bubble, the exact same place they're stuck now with the exact same people. I wanted to work for WCW. I wanted to be a part of what they were doing. You know, through Kevin Nash and through Jeff Jarrett, who were friends of mine, they put the word into Eric. That's where I had the conversation with Eric. And bro, I am telling you, if Eric Bischoff would have hired me at that time, the entire landscape of professional wrestling would have been different. There would have been no Attitude Era. Vince McMahon was not going to do the Attitude Era on his own, because if there was going to be a rejuvenation in the WWE, we'd be getting that same rejuvenation right now. We'd be getting it right now as the numbers go down on a week. There's nobody there to rejuvenate the company. There's nobody there to do it now. There was nobody there to do it then. So if Eric actually would have hired me, there would not have been an Attitude Era. I can tell you that without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, of course, Vince, all your talk, everybody wants to hear you talk all the time and also hear your viewpoint. You know, you talk about Castrate the Marks, you talk about Disco, you talk about all these great shows, and they could get all of these for like less than a buck a week, right?
Yeah, we do over 10 shows a week, Matt, for under a dollar a week. Bro, we're here to entertain, man. We are here to entertain. I mean, that's why I like to have a lot of different personalities. Guys, it's less than a dollar a week. No long-term commitment. You could sign up for a month. If you don't like it, you could bail out. But I recommend strongly you try it. Go to russosbrand.com.
It's got more subscribers than it's ever had. More people are listening to it. If you want to give it a try, you're like, I'm not sure about it. It's $4. Just put up the $4 or the for the month. You can cancel after a month easily. And it might add a lot more listening material to your weekly intake. Check it out at russosbrand.com. We're going to talk a little bit about the history about what got DX started in a lot of different ways. But let's talk about a little bit more about the influence of NWO on DX.
Yes.
You know,
NWO. Well, he is the seed. This came from Vince, bro. I wish I could sit here and tell you it came from me. I would fail the lie detector test. This came from Vince. It was just the two of us, bro. I remember just the two of us sitting at his table. And the NWO was freaking red hot. And Vince turned to me and he said to me, he goes, Vince, why aren't we doing the same thing? And his point was, Vince, we have the guys, we have the cool guys, and they're younger. You got a bunch of old men doing the NWO. This is what Vince said. They're old guys, bro. We can do the same exact thing, and we actually have guys that are young and hip. Okay, bro? Here's another thing. Okay, yeah, Vince Russo takes credit for everything. The name, bro. Bro, I told you, I worked right next door to Creative Services. Bro, they had just done a pay-per-view where they came out with the posters and everything else. And the pay-per-view was D-Generation X. And I was like, that's freaking brilliant. And bro, I don't even know who came up with that. It was a nameless, faceless person. But I saw D-Generation X. They had already come up with it. And I said, shoot, bro, that's freaking awesome. So I did not come up with the seed. I did not come up with the name. And as I've said in many, many interviews, Shane, who was very, very young at the time, was very influential. I would give Shane credit for the music. I remember we were in the parking garage at Titan Tower. And you know, we were just talking about this, you know. And Shane, Vince, come in my car. I want you to hear this song. This is like what I'm thinking about for DX. And I went in his car and it sounded very much like what DX theme song became.
It sounds so, like he took you and showed you some Rage Against the Machine.
It was definitely a band, Matt. I can't remember what band.
It is definitely an ode to Rage Against.
Yeah, and it was already an established band that he played for. I can't remember who it was. But, you know, like I said, bro, Vince was the seed. Shane was very influential, you know, in the music. The Creative Services came up with the freaking name. Kevin Dunn, you know, TV, they came up with that entrance. So, I mean, my God, bro, there was really a little bit from everybody. My involvement was, bro, once we got the ball rolling, now I'm writing for them. I mean, I'm writing the skits. I'm writing for DX on a weekly basis. Bro, at that point, you know, Sean basically, you know, I have a lot of trust with Sean. He's basically like delivering my promos verbatim. Triple H is basically delivering my promos verbatim. So like I will take the credit for, you know, the writing, but I was writing for them like I was writing for anybody else. It was just part of the show.
How powerful were the Click pre-Attitude Era?
Well, bro, they had a lot of heat. They had a lot of heat in the locker room with a lot of the boys. I even remember, bro, like they had their own locker room. And like I can remember like some of the boys, you know, like leaving derogatory signs on their locker room door. I mean, literally like, bro, they had a lot of heat. You know, bro, it's funny because I'm just telling you, bro, with a personality like Shawn Michaels, who was at the head of this, I don't think there was ever a time, Matt, where Vince McMahon ever had any control over Shawn Michaels. Ever. I mean, ever. I always think, like, for whatever reason, Shawn, I never saw a guy that would say to Vince McMahon whatever he wanted to say, bro. And I swear to God, Vince never had control of that relationship with Shawn. So now you add to that Kevin, and now you add to that Scott. You know, X-Pac and Triple H at that time were the silent minority. But I mean, my God, bro, you've got Shawn, Scott, and Kevin, meeting with Vince. Bro, those guys are going to walk out of that meeting getting what they want. I mean, there's just no question about it. And there was a lot of heat among the boys.
That booking power where they were able to maybe do stuff with PCO, who was Pierre of the Quebecers at the time, or with Dean Douglas, or with a lot of other people that complained about the clique, was that misplaced criticism, or is that accurate that if these guys didn't like you, you were kind of screwed?
Well, Matt, I got to tell you something. I think a lot of it was jealousy. I think a lot of guys were jealous of the stroke. But you don't take it out on them. You take it out on Vince McMahon. I mean, Vince McMahon was the one who gave them that stroke. Bro, if anybody could get that kind of stroke, I don't care who you are, you're going to take it. So, like, I don't blame them for having the stroke that they did. Vince McMahon gave them that stroke. So I think a lot of jealousy, bro, came with that, because a lot of guys, you know, feared Vince and they wouldn't talk back to Vince, and, you know, they would just never have that kind of stroke that the clique had.
There was, you want to talk about something interesting about the history of wrestling. You talk about if you were to go to WCW when Eric Bischoff called you, then history would have changed, right?
No doubt.
What if WCW, Eric Bischoff, I'm not sure what his position was at the time, what if they would have offered Triple H more than $50,000 a year and he would have stayed with WCW? What if they would have seen in him what WWF saw in him and Triple H didn't make the jump in 1995 to WWE? How different would wrestling history be from that point on?
Oh, it would again, bro. That was definitely another game changer, because Triple H, China, and Shawn, the origins of DX, that all fit like a glove, bro. I mean, like a glove. I don't know of if any of those parts were replaced, it would have never been the same. They all had their role in getting that entity over. And bro, I mean, that was a game changer without a shadow of a doubt.
And not to mention, he would have never met Stephanie. He would have never, everything would be so different.
And bro, I'm telling you, without a shadow of a doubt, if Eric Bischoff would have hired me, without a shadow of a doubt, bro, he would have fired me. So, like, I would not – I'm telling you, bro, I don't think I would have had the run that I had, because I think if I went to work for Eric, I think I would have been done in 6 months. The WWE would not have taken me back for going there. My career would have been over at that point.
And you'd probably be happier.
Yes, I probably would be. I'm serious. I probably would be, yeah.
Be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or running late, to find yourself at a railway crossing waiting for a train. And if the signals are going and the train's not even there yet, you can feel a bit tempted to try and sneak across the tracks. Well, don't ever. Trains are often going a lot faster than you expect them to be, and they can't stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it can take a train over a mile to stop. By that time, what used to be your car is just a crushed hunk of metal. And what used to be you, well, better not to think about that. The point is, you can't know how quickly the train will arrive. The train can't stop even if it sees you. The result is disaster. If the signals are on, the train is on its way, and you just need to remember one thing. Stop. Trains can't. I do want to bring up one point, which is You've said many times that one of the, or the most pivotal moment of the Attitude Era was the day that Vince McMahon held up a magazine, held up your magazine, and said, this is what we needed. And there was another event that took place that a lot of people say was a big contributor to the Attitude Era, and I'm not sure you know of it. So basically, the story goes, and I think this comes from Triple H, but everybody knew it beforehand. There was a meeting at a hotel. Several top agents were there along with the clique. Vince told the guys to evaluate the roster and advise them on who should stay and who he should let go. Triple H said the meeting was the first spark of the Attitude Era because everybody was pushing for more reality. They questioned, why do we have Doink the Clown? Why can't there just be wrestlers? Why do we have to be firemen and cops? Why can't it be more real? Vince agreed that they needed to get away from the campy product geared towards children. They brought up the rock band Kiss, who had been an edgy group but turned away their core audience by having a cartoon and catering to kids. They were no longer cool and were a parody of themselves. Do you know of that meeting and how much?
No, I don't know of that meeting at all, but that's pretty cool. I mean, I don't doubt that meeting for a second. That's pretty cool. That could have been the origins of the Attitude Era, you know, very much so. You know, again, though, bro, man, you talk about Vince just having those guys there at the meeting. You're freaking alienating the rest of that locker room. I don't think that's a good idea. Now, when you tell me that, Matt, I've never heard that before. I don't doubt it. I don't doubt Triple H for a second. But I got to ask Triple H this. Why aren't you having that same conversation with them now? I mean, honestly, Hunter, why aren't you having that same conversation now? Because you want to talk about being wrestling becoming a parody of itself, bro? Why aren't you having that conversation now? But I got to tell you something, Vince, that alienates the rest of the locker room right there, Matt.
So you're saying to me that if like four wrestlers, have Vince's ear. Everybody knows he's got a personal relationship with them that influences what goes on in the company. That would create animosity, jealousy, hatred, all that stuff from the other wrestlers.
No doubt. No doubt, bro.
So hypothetically, if like one writer did the same thing.
Yep.
All right. So the clique gets powerful, and then you start hearing news that Diesel.
That's so interesting to me that you tell me that, because I believe that 100% and sincerely.
And I knew you'd
Hunter, like you're still there. Like you're still there. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're still there and you're back to the same point.
With the click, this power that went on, the jealousy, but most importantly, the power. Eventually, Diesel and Scott Hall, Diesel and Razor, which is Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, they get signed away to WCW, and everybody knows they all break character in Madison Square Garden, of all places, to have the curtain call. We haven't talked much about this. I'm fascinated by it because it's the beginning to a lot of, it's the beginning to the end of a lot of stuff, and the beginning to the beginning of a lot of stuff in wrestling history. Where were you when you heard about the curtain call? What was the reaction?
Well, yeah, well, let's back up with when I first heard Scott and Kevin were going. It was a one-on-one dinner with Bruce. And Bruce broke the news to me that they were both leaving. And, bro, I got to tell you, he was devastated. And Bruce told me that Vince was devastated, okay? And I was like, bro, and I say this same thing today. You know, I was like, bro, no one talent or two talents are bigger than the company. I mean, bro, there are people behind them that can fill those shoes. You know, yeah, bro, it's a big loss, but are they really bigger than the WWE? And, you know, Bruce was devastated. Vince was devastated. I think they were really caught by surprise. Because never had they lost stars of that magnitude to a competitor because of dollars and cents. Never.
Can you understand at least why, like, they're so pissed off? Like, because that's, you know, something you hear Cornette say is, you know, Vince doesn't give a shit about the history. He doesn't know shit about the history. He doesn't respect what we went through. In a way, did you respect why Cornette, Pritchard, the old school guys were so upset.
Yeah, bro, I totally understood it, Matt. I totally understood it, but I really felt like they were taking it to the umpteenth degree. Like, I really felt like, I mean, it was like life and death, bro. I understood completely. But I mean, I just felt like they were taking it to the extreme. And it was like, guys, like, this is a freaking work. You know, these guys are friends. Nobody believes this shit is true. Bro, you got to understand, the internet is in full mode right now. There's no more kayfabe. I mean, you can read every day what's going on in the lives of these people, who's friends with who, the power the click has in the locker room. Bro, this shit is all out there now. This isn't, you know, kayfabe stuff anymore.
Do you understand, like, that when you say something like, this is fake, it's not real, that's out, that is separate from the fact that there's a tradition of respecting this, and that in Bruce Pritchard, Jim Cornette's mind, a lot of wrestlers' minds at the time, this was disrespecting that history and also disrespecting the product you guys put out, and maybe even disrespecting the history of the Garden.
Bro, I don't argue with that at all, and I totally understand that point of view, but there is a whole other side to that, and the other side is, this is reality, bro. These are two guys that are leaving the company. These guys are close friends. This is really reality. And, you know, again, at that point in time, in my mind and my opinion, this is where the company needs to go. And, bro, I didn't stand there. You got to understand there, Matt. I didn't stand there and argue with them and laugh at them and disrespect them. I didn't do any of that. I kept my mouth shut. I let them react. But to me, and bro, you know, again, I'm really tired of hearing Cornette with the, you know, I don't respect this and I don't respect that and I don't, bro, don't give me that freaking bullshit. I was watching wrestling when Bruno Sammartino was the champion. I was watching wrestling when I was a 10-year-old freaking kid. So don't tell me I didn't disrespect the product, bro. When you know the something needs to evolve, you're not disrespecting the past. You just know the past is the past. We need to move into the here and now. We need to evolve the product. It has nothing to do with disrespect. Cornette likes to use that word over and over and over again. Bro, that has nothing to do with it. What it has to do with is evolution, bro. You've got to evolve. Did they take it in Major League Baseball? Oh my God, bro. Did we disrespect the tradition of the Babe and Lou Gehrig and DiMaggio and Mantle when there was a designated hitter? Oh my God, did we disrespect the tradition of wrestling? No, bro. They evolved the game. And Cornette always likes to say that. And the reason why he says that, bro, is because to this day, he has not evolved. So when you want to change something, he looks at that as a disrespect. Bro, the reason you want to change it is because you want it to be over. You want more people to watch. You want to grow that wrestling audience. That's why you want to change it. It's got nothing to do with disrespect, bro.
I believe you 100%. You have respect for the history of wrestling. You weren't wiping it away. You were doing what you felt was in the interest of the evolution. But I also would say that the way that you had to present it and the way that you come off talking about it, I understand why Cornette feels that way. Could you kind of understand?
No, I do, Matt. But see, Matt, I don't know if you really understand. Just because you weren't, I was involved.
Oh, for
you
sure.
You know, so I had firsthand experience. Matt, here's it's the stubbornness, Matt. They're so damn stubborn. When we talked a little bit about this last week, bro, when the numbers are telling you and the numbers and the facts are there in black and white, and you got to sit there and try to convince them over and over and over again when you've got all the proofs. You've got the documented facts. Guys, here is the proof. But it was like that didn't matter. No matter what the numbers said, you know, less and less people watching, you know, the ratings at the WWE were like a 1 point something at the time. Even with all this data and all this proof, bro, they were so damn effing stubborn. So you get to the point of getting completely frustrated because it's like, guys, this is not my opinion. Everything I am presenting to you is factual based on numbers. And Matt, there is such a level of stubbornness that anybody in my spot, you lose your patience after a while, bro. You just lose your patience with them.
How much stubbornness is it on your end to say, there's things that can be done to improve this, and I'm the one with the answer. I know exactly what needs to happen. I'm interpreting these numbers right. Isn't that stubborn on your end as well?
Matt, listen, I don't like the product today. Okay, Matt? Matt, if the numbers were going through the roof, then I'm clueless. Then I don't know what I'm talking about because obviously there are a lot of people out there that like this. So if I was, you know, doing my shows now on my soapbox saying this product is terrible right now, but the ratings were going up, I'd be the first one to say, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm out of touch. That's not the case here. The case here at the time were, bro, we were dropping off that mountain at unbelievable speed, bro. And they were not doing anything to stop the bleeding, to change the momentum, nothing. So this really is, bro, I swear to God, Matt, whether you believe me or not, this has nothing to do with Vince Russo. This has to do with the company and the state of the WWE. And guys, if WCW keeps doing what they're doing and we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to be out of business.
I really have no business here. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just a fan just like you guys. Decided I wanted to give this a shot. And hey, it's worked out pretty good. And I got my own show now over on the MLW Radio Network called Total Engagement. And guess what? We just passed 1 million downloads. Can you believe that? Join us and see what the fuss is about. Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn. Go to MLWradio.com or TotalEngage.net. You never know what to expect. Don't buy from Ashley Furniture. So at this time, right before where you're talking about, when the click breaks up, there is some, everybody says, and I talked to you, you were telling me about how well Triple H handled everything in the wake of the, curtain call. Everybody says Triple H was punished. Triple H was in line for this or that King of the Ring or IC run or whatever. And Triple H was absolutely punished. Is that what happened? Number one. And last week when you said that, it showed what kind of character he had. It showed to Vince what he was made of. What did you mean by that?
Well, yeah, bro, that's why, like, I'm not going to lie, bro. That's why there is a little animosity on my behalf towards Triple H, because I think Triple H, bro, I never forget people that helped me in the past and people that were there when I never forget that, bro. Never, ever, ever. I think that's part of my Italian heritage. But bro, I can remember pulling him to the side. Bro, Kevin and Scott are gone. They're not going to do anything to Sean because he's the champion. bro, they are going to shit on you. They are going to torture you. They are going to bury you. They are going to make your lives miserable. Bro, you got to understand, I'm working with Cornette and Bruce, so I know what the feeling is. So I'm telling Triple H, bro, this is what's going to happen. He already knew. I mean, he knew. Like if this wasn't news to him, he knew. And I was like, bro, you just got to eat shit. You just got to keep your mouth shut and just eat shit, because they're going to do everything to make your life miserable. He knew. He didn't argue with me. You know, he was well aware of it. And that's exactly what he did, bro. He kept his mouth shut. Whatever they were going to do, they were going to do. But the time was going to pass.
Talk a little bit about how important was Triple H to Shawn Michaels off screen? How important was he his handler, his body guy, his communicator, his interpreter? You know, that he became crucial because Shawn was so important and Triple H was a voice of reason, right?
Well, yeah, Shawn was so important and Shawn was so out of it. And like, I can remember, bro, building up to WrestleMania, you know, with Austin and Shawn. And I can remember, bro, Triple H being at every conversation, because Shawn was being Shawn. Bro, so many times I would watch Austin just bite his tongue, like so many freaking times. And there was Triple H, always the voice of reason. Bro, and you talk about an impossible spot. He's buddies with Shawn, but he can't let that come across to Austin, because the minute Austin would have felt like it was a 2-on-1, bro, you would have had hell on your hands. But I don't know how Hunter did it, but bro, he found a way to remain neutral, to not piss off Shawn because he was his friend, and to not piss off, Austin, thinking that, you know, they were 2-on-1 in him and wielding their power. I don't know how he did it, bro. And I watched him do it time after time after time. I don't know how he did it. I swear to God, bro, I look at him today and some of the things that he has said, some of the things, you know, how he dealt with me in 2002, I'm like, bro, like I have not spoken to you in 20 years, but you're not the same guy. Like I knew that guy. Some of the shit you say today, bro, and some of the stuff that comes out of your mouth and the way you handled me in 2002, I can tell, you know, this is a much different guy. And bro, we all change. I mean, there was no Stephanie at that time. I mean, you know, he was, you know, him and China were an item. I mean, it was a completely different time, but I don't know how he pulled that off, bro.
Would you say, if you had to choose, cause you're kind of a black and white guy, does Triple H either A, have extraordinary people skills, something I don't have? And when I look at Triple H, and I have said, if there's one thing he has, I could have it. It's that people skills, where he was able to do that thing with Shawn, where ingratiate himself to this guy who was out of his mind, at the same time, live down his punishment, and then adapt to his role now where he's talking to talent, he's talking to media. Is it that he has just amazing, amazing people skills and instincts, or is he just the greatest worker in the history of wrestling?
No, maybe he is today. It wasn't back then. He was not working anybody back then. Matt, you know, you're in a testosterone filled environment that can explode at any second. Bro, Triple H never raised his voice, was always cool, calm, and collected, was always in control of himself. The presentation and the delivery, bro, was always very soft-spoken, always very calm, always very reasonable. It was incredible, bro. Like I said, I don't know that guy today. I don't know that guy today. But I'm talking about that guy back then. He was the calm in the middle of the storm, bro.
Well, I just remember Triple H being there. I don't remember a reason being given at first. I just remember Triple H just being there with Shawn. Whose idea was it, and was there any hesitation?
Oh, man, there wasn't any hesitation till later on when we added to DX. But, you know, bro, again, Shawn and Triple H were friends. Shawn and Triple H both had long hair. Shawn and Triple H were both young. Shawn and Triple H were both cool. To me, like, it was just a perfect fit. Like, you know, that's why, you know, a lot of times you'll hear me say, bro, this shit isn't rocket science. Like, okay, bro, Shawn puts Brett in the sharpshooter. The referee rings the bell. Okay, bro, we're going to call Rocky Maivia the Rock. Same thing here. Like, you look at Shawn, you look at Triple H. God, bro, we should put those two guys together. They're pretty freaking cool. It's simple.
And it reflected reality, which was something you always right. like doing, whether it's calling the fans to click or whether it's bringing the curtain call to the forefront on screen. The first addition to DX was one of these many weird little trades with ECW, where ECW, their pay-per-view was mentioned a bunch on Raw. And it's reported that that is in return for Rick Rude coming back to WWE to be the new quote-unquote bodyguard manager for Shawn Michaels. What was the first you heard Rick Rude was coming back, and what was his role supposed to be?
Yeah, that's all Bruce, man. You know, Bruce was working that whole ECW gimmick with Paulie, and like, I had nothing to do with that. I don't know anything about it to this day. I don't know if Vince was funding ECW. I don't know any of that, bro. I really, really don't know. And, you know, I mean, again, bro, I'm just kind of like the third man, you know, the third man on the, in the wheel right now. You know, they're writing this show and I'm just kind of keeping my mouth shut and sitting back and listening. So I don't know, bro. I don't know what the deal was, what the situation was. I don't know.
By October 1997, they call themselves D-Generation X. You talked about how the name came about. DX is starting to get their wind under their wings and they're having these things with Slaughter. What, talk about a little bit these first...
Yeah, bro, right there between, that's when I really started, bro, right there. When you talk about Rude leaving and D-Generation X, I mean, that was this, right in there was when Vince had that meeting. I mean, sometime right in there, bro, is when I started. You know, bro, that's the thing, man, that like people do not understand. And I shouldn't even have to say this, bro, because it's so obvious. Oh, yeah, Vince likes to take credit for the Attitude Era and look at the roster they had and this, that, and they had Austin and Taker and this, that, the other thing, blah, blah, blah. Brody, you know how difficult it is to write for guys that are so over? Do you know how hard that is, bro? Because your job as a writer is to keep bringing them to that next level. You can't write subpar dialogue or a subpar show and bring them down a few notches. It needs to be a constant weekly build. And when these guys are so good, it is so freaking challenging to give them, you know, good material week after week after week. So, You know, I'm writing for Austin to be the badass. And every week he's got to do something that's badass. He's got to say something that's badass. Shawn and DX and Hunter, they're cool. So every week they got to be saying cool shit. They got to be doing cool shit. You know, week after week after week, bro, that's the challenge. That's why today you see many great performers falling flat on their face. The two that come to mind are Bray Wyatt and Elias. Bray Wyatt and Elias are better performers than the writers are writers. So they're not getting material that is, you know, bringing them up a notch every week. They're at this high level. The material they're giving is actually bringing them down. You can't let that happen as a writer. And I was not going to let that happen, bro. That's where the challenge comes in.
So I know I said this earlier today, but I'm not sure you guys were listening. So I'm going to say it again. I know it can be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or running late, to find yourself at a railway crossing waiting for a train. And if the signals are going and the train's not even there yet, you can feel a bit tempted to try and sneak across the tracks. Well, don't ever. Trains are often going a lot faster than you expect them to be, and they can't stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it can take a train over a mile to stop. By that time, what used to be your car is just a crushed hunk of metal. And what used to be you, well, better not to think about that. The point is, you can't know how quickly the train will arrive. The train can't stop even if it sees you, and the result is disaster. If the signals are on, the train is on its way. And you just need to remember one thing: stop. Trains can't. When you start really getting moved over to the head of creative at this point.
Yes. Because I remember, bro, I the pieces all fall in place now, Matt. They did the NWO turn. I wanted to be part of that company. I talked to Eric Bischoff on the phone. After I talked to Eric Bischoff on the phone, I felt dirty. This is where Vince can't lie. You see what I'm saying, bro? This is what, like, I can't. I felt dirty. That's where I set up the appointment with Linda, because I wanted her to tell me that all I was capable of was doing the magazine. Then I was going to full force try to get hired by WCW. That's where Vince came into that meeting. Okay, bro, it was literally days after where he threw the magazine down at the on the desk. So I saw the Hogan thing. That's where I want to be. They know what's happening. That's cool. I had my meeting with Linda. Vince walked in. Bro, it might have been a Friday. And then the magazine incident may have been on that Tuesday.
There was stuff happening on screen and off screen all the time. And one thing that happened, you said Rick Rude. But Rick Rude was on both shows on the same night. He was on Nitro and he was on a taped Raw. It speaks to how crazy everything was at that time, right? All the back and forth.
Man, Matt, I'll remember, like, this was the weakest I ever saw Vince. And it was after Piper signed with the WCW. And I got to tell you, I lost a little respect for him over this, because Piper left. And, bro, there was like a company-wide meeting and ask the CEO whatever you want to ask him, whatever it was. But I'll never forget, bro, Vince was up there and Piper had just gone. Maybe like the night before or 2 days before, whatever. And Vince turned around and was like, they took Scott and they took Kevin and they took Rude. And now they took Roddy Piper from me. Who else? There's nobody left for you to take. Who else are you going to take from me? And I remember sitting there. And I'm saying to myself, is this the guy that put all the territories out of business? Like, seriously, Vince, like, you're going to cry about WCW taking wrestlers from you, paying them more money, when you put company after company after company out of business? But, bro, that shows you, Matt, the reason why I tell you that. Bro, that was the lowest point I ever saw Vince out. That was desperation. He was at a point of desperation, and the desperation was, holy shit, bro, there is somebody that has more money than I do and can pay these guys more money than I'm willing to, and I'm effed. And when I swear to God, bro, I lost respect from that day. Because I was like, bro, put on your big boy pants, man. Okay, you did the same thing to other freaking people. Okay, bro, now it's time for you to rise to the occasion, man.
Was he actually crying?
No, he wasn't crying, but it was poor, pitiful me. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, it was poor, pitiful me. And I was like, poor, pitiful you? Seriously, bro?
It's the funniest thing to me. It reminds me of The Sopranos when Johnny Sack cried at his daughter's wedding. And Phil Leotardo looks on and he goes, I lost respect for him. That day
he was looking for sympathy from, you know, his employees. And I'm like, bro, you put dozens and dozens of companies out of business. Are you kidding me? I mean,
maybe he should ask Vern Gagne for sympathy.
Yeah, I guess. Or Bill right. Watts,
or Fritz. Yeah. Eric, or
yeah.
Jim Crockett.
Yeah. Right. I mean, come on, Vince.
The NWA. Getting back to Rude leaves and China joins. And now we have what we know as DX really just harassing Sergeant Slaughter every week. A couple memorable moments of that. One is, of course, the windshield wiper helmets when Slaughter's spitting, and DX wears these helmets that had windshield wipers on them because his spit is getting on them. Is that something that you remember coming up with?
Bro, I can actually remember pitching that to Sean. I mean, I remember because, bro, to this day, I think that is one of the funniest things. And, bro, here's what's funny about it. Bro, I could have done that for anybody. Okay, anybody. Anybody could have been in Sean's shoes under the thing with the windshield. It was the way he freaking sold it, bro. He sold it only like Sean could sell it, bro. So, you know, again, it's like, okay, I write this scene, and then now you put Shawn Michaels in this scene, and it's just freaking unbelievable. One of my favorite things of all time, bro.
Another memorable segment involving the early days of DX is when Shawn Michaels had a referee outfit, I think, and had some shorts on, and he stuffed some gauze down there. And one of the wrestlers backstage said he wouldn't go out there like with it. And he's like, the hell I won't. And not only did he go out there with this enormous bulge that he was pointing to constantly, but he was jumping up and putting it in Vince's and Sergeant Slaughter's face.
That's Sean, bro. That's Sean. That's not direction on the script. That's 1000% Shawn Michaels.
So what's the attitude then? Are you guys like, we didn't write that, but it worked? He's being a dick, but it worked. Is that basically what you're thinking?
It worked. I mean, bro, I thought it was I'm sure that's pissing off the Bruces and the Cornette. Like, I'm positive. I think it's freaking gold. I mean, I'm just going hysterical. I think it's tremendous.
When you have the DX now, when you have, you know, China and Triple H and HBK, do they have as much heat as the Click did?
No. They really don't, bro, for a couple of reasons. Triple H and China. You know, Triple H was not Scott Hall. Triple H was not Kevin Nash. And everybody loved China. Everybody. So, no. All the heat's on Sean now. You know, Triple H and China are not getting that heat because Triple H is not carrying himself like a douche. Bro, that's why I'll never forget. It vividly stands out in my mind. I got hot at Triple H one time because he was over now. You know, he was over, and I wanted him to do a job for D'Lo, and he refused it. And the reason I got so hot at him, bro, was because it was out of character. And I remember telling him, bro, how many guys put you over to get you to where you are right now? Are you effing kidding me now? And I'll never forget that, bro, because it was really, really, really out of character for him.
You knew Sean was leaving. We talked about that. Why was it so important to continue DX the brand with Sean leaving as opposed to saying, let's launch Triple H in China?
God, bro, it was just over. I mean, it was just over. And again, bro, he takes credit for everything. Bro, Vince McMahon wanted to put Rockabilly and the Roadie with Triple H in China as part of DX. And I remember, like, I swear to God, bro, I remember him pitching that to me. And I was like, really? Like, Vince, like, really? And he was like, yeah, you know, really. I think those guys can get over. Bro, I did not see that. I did not see that. And bro, here's the thing you never really hear. Sean and Hunter wanted no part of that. They did not want those guys in the group. So now they're the new age outlaws. Now, you know, I'm writing for them, and now they're getting over. And now all of a sudden, as they're getting over, it's all right with Triple H and Sean that, okay, now they can be members of DX. But bro, at the beginning, they did not want those guys in the group.
When they started, when they were put together, was this November, was the plan then to put them with DX, or was it after they won the titles and they got a little wind under them?
No, we wanted to put them with DX immediately, and Sean and Hunter shit on it. So then now, okay, bro, let's get these guys over on their own. And I got to tell you something, bro. Do you remember the incident with the dumpster with Terry Funk and Cat Mick Foley?
Yeah,
remember
it happened about a year. It happened in 1998, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Bro, I never saw Vince McMahon more hands-on with anybody than the New Age Outlaws at that time. That dumpster thing, bro, Vince spent hours and hours and hours during the day working with them. I'm not sure exactly what it was, bro. I don't know if it was like his idea and he had this vision and he thought these guys could be huge and he just owned it. But bro, he took more stock in those two guys than I think I've ever seen him take in anybody else.
Did you start to see something in them? And when did you start to see, wow, these guys
really as soon as Road Dogg opened his mouth, man, as soon as he started doing that stuff, like, I mean, bro, I didn't write that shit. I didn't come up with ladies and gentlemen, people. I did not write any of that shit. I wouldn't take an ounce of credit for that. I mean, that was all 100% him.
When was the plan put in place to put those guys in DX? Because it was all announced on this kind of this great reset show. You know, we know that Austin's now champion, so Vince comes out as the super heel, undoubtedly the heel, and sets up himself as the antagonist for Austin. At the same time, in the same episode, X-Pac debuts, and the New Age Outlaws also join DX. When did you guys know this was going to happen? Did you guys know?
Bro, it was really when Sean and Hunter were comfortable with it. When Sean and Hunter said, okay, we got it now. Like, and you know, bro, I don't blame them. I mean, I really don't blame them. I don't want to sound like I do. DX was super over. These guys were not. They did not want these guys bringing them down. So they basically, you know, these guys are going to have to prove themselves. I don't blame them for any of that for a second. But after they proved themselves, you know, I mean, there was a point when Triple H and Hunter said, okay.
When did you have that show written? Like, you might not remember the specifics, but if you're thinking you're resetting everything, you're announcing the new DX, this must have been something that you must have had kind of been working on for a while before that.
Well, it was really knowing when Sean was leaving, and you know, we wanted to keep DX over, so there had to be a marriage of Sean leaving and them coming in. So it was really timing.
And the idea was to hold X-Pac until the day after Mania so that you could launch this new DX.
Yes, yes.
Where did you guys see the new DX going? Did you guys see it where DX is this really great thing? Let's really continue it. Or did you say in your heart, did you think, wow, this can never be the same? Or did you think, wow,
nah, these guys really were cool, bro. They were cool, 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 cool. They were cool, man. I mean, Sean Waltman is still cool to this day. I mean, let's face it, you know. Nah, bro, they were going to get it over. There was never a doubt. There was never, ever a doubt. These guys were cool. Never a doubt.
Where is Triple H at this point? You know, his meal ticket in a lot of ways.
He takes full charge. He's in full control.
Is he just anxious? Is he chomping at the bit to be the face
of
it?
Yes.
What do you remember about Triple H being ready? willing and able to take the helm of DX?
100% confident, not a doubting bone in his body, bro. He was under Sean for a very long time. It was his time. I mean, this was his time now.
In your mind, do you think there was a bit of relief to Triple H that he didn't have?
Oh, no doubt. There had to be, bro. I mean, my God, are you kidding me? There had to be. That had to be an Alcatraz around his neck, an albatross around his neck, bro. No doubt. No doubt.
The reaction that night, shortly after 10 p.m., X-Pac comes out to a huge pop. There was no surprise really about it. There was a buzz in the building about it. There were signs about it. What did you think of the reaction to X-Pac? Was there a part of you that was like, is this guy a big enough name? Or did you know it was going to be awesome?
Nah, bro, I knew he was fired up. I mean, I knew backstage, everything that went down with Bischoff and WCW, whatever, I knew he was fired up. Bro, I knew he was going to cut the promo of his life because he was fired up. That's how he felt. He was feeling it. And I think that day and that promo going forward, everybody looked at him in a much, much different light.
How important was it to you to kind of get just a little bit of that NWO rub, take a little bit out of WCW and have?
You know what, bro? They were doing it to themselves. Like, seriously, like they were killing the NWO. They were watering that thing down week after week after week. So they were doing it to themselves. So, I mean, I wasn't looking at it in that way at all.
DX was pretty heavily cheered. How did you feel this was going to go? Do you think DX was going to remain a heel? That was the plan, but at the same time, McMahon's the big heel.
You know, there was no plan, bro. There was no plan. It was very generic, and we were writing week to week to week to week. We were being true to every freaking character. A lot of this was happening organically, and I've said it a million times, Matt, this shit writes itself, man.
And you had a lot of really ready-made feuds for DX. You know, they could go against DOA, or they could go over against the Nation. They could help out McMahon. At the time, you saw Triple H as the guy. You were a big proponent of Triple H getting the title and being pushed. There are other guys who were not so big on Triple H, right?
Well, Jim Cornette said in a meeting with me, Vince, and him, and I'll never forget this, and I quote, Triple H will never earn a dime in this business.
That's something Jim Cornette said?
Quote, unquote.
Wow. You know, we talk about ratings, we talk about numbers, and this is really where you guys start to make a big headway with numbers. How did you guys feel about where you guys were at starting to really turn the corner and beating them?
Matt, we just knew, and again, now it kind of gets whittled down to me and Vince, and that's it. It's just the two of us. Bro, we just knew consistency was the most important thing. We just knew delivering a good show week after week after week after week, those ratings were going to grow. Just consistency, bro. See, this again, you know, you want to compare TNA to WWE. Well, you got to compare Vince and Dixie, okay? Bro, Vince was committed to this, and it was a slow build. When you look at the ratings, it was a slow build. He was committed to it, bro. He never changed course. There was never any knee-jerk reactions. He was committed to this, bro. Dixie, on the other hand, at TNA, bro, week after week after week, knee-jerk, 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 based on the number, knee-jerk, we got to do this, we got to do that. No, bro, you don't have to do any of that. The only thing you have to do is have a consistently good show week after week after week. That's it.
It did, the hype for the WrestleMania did pay off that night, even in the ratings. You guys won 5 of the 8 head-to-head segments, peaking for when Austin gave McMahon a stunner and the Sean Waltman interview. And actually, they beat you in the overrun because it was Hogan versus Piper versus the DX against Funk and Jack. But if you're winning 5 out of 8 segments at this time, you're really starting to feel good. It's shrinking down the creative because Vince is starting to see that what Vince Russo's doing is working.
Yeah, bro, that's it. I just needed his vote of confidence. That's all I needed, bro. Let's just, again, we're going to deliver a good show every single week. Next week's show is going to be better than this week's show. That's all I needed, bro. I needed somebody that believed in me, that was just going to, like, let me do my thing. And bro, don't get me wrong. If the ratings weren't going up, he probably would have pulled the trigger. Don't get me, you know, he should have pulled the trigger. That's what blows me away today. I look at their numbers and I'm like, how do these people have jobs? Like, bro, if I lost 500,000 viewers from hour one to hour three, fire me. Fire me, bro, because I'm not writing an interesting show enough to keep the audience. Fire me. So, bro, you got to understand, if this show is not delivering, I'm expecting to be fired. Fire me. But all I could ask you is, bro, like, let's just go with this. Just go with this and see what happens, bro. Vince McMahon was the only one in my entire career that went with it, that didn't make knee-jerk reactions, that didn't listen to other people. He was the only one that let it ride. And the success was good shows week after week after week.
And speaking of week after week after week, you know, we're not going to get a fair reflection of what the rating was for that show during that show. It's about what happens the next week. And what happens the next week is best detailed by Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. The first headline is, Vince, Raw record ratings. And it goes on to say that the big story is the ending of the 83-week WCW run on top, and that this was by far the best head-to-head ratings, drew its all-time record for ratings in a competitive situation. This was really where the tide actually turned. It was Vince someone who was into the ratings? I know you were following the ratings. This must have been a big deal for you to look at the
ratings. Not at all. Matt, and I'm telling you, those ratings used to come in. You know, Vince always used to, if you could, guys could see this on video, but always used to have those glasses at the end of his nose. We'd get the ratings during a creative meeting. He'd look at them, put it to the side, and bro, for like a year and a half, here's what he would say to me every time. Vince, we work damn hard for those threes. That's it. And go on and go on and go on. So, Matt, I got to tell you, man, I say this all the time, and I mean this. I never stopped to smell the roses, ever, because I was so driven that next week's show's got to be better. Next week's show's got to be better. Next week's show's got to be better. Even in this case with getting those ratings and stopping the streak, bro, that's great. But we got to beat them 2 weeks in a row and then 3 weeks in a row. You know what I'm saying? I'm just being honest, bro.
Yeah, you still got to work. And when you have that kind of success, it's followed by great fear. You know, like you're like, oh, shit, this could end. This could be over.
Yes. And, yes.
We're going to bring this to a close talking about this particular Raw and how DX had such a big impact and also Austin. But the show is about DX. The next week, not the week after WrestleMania, but the week after that, Meltzer calls one of the hottest 117 minutes of television in company history. In some ways, almost reinventing pro wrestling television. Unfortunately, with wrestling barely being an afterthought in the product, what do you think of that, of someone like Meltzer who is conceding that it is 117 of the hottest minutes, but wrestling wasn't a part of it really for him, and it was unfortunate. What is your reaction to that?
Bro, I'm starting to dive a little bit into the mind of Dave Meltzer, because he made another comment about that last night and castrating the marks. The comment he made was, bro, Rock and Austin were over, not for their wrestling, because of their persona and who they were. That's why the ratings were what they were. Bro, here's what I'm starting to believe about Meltzer. I really believe, bro, Meltzer's not an idiot. Okay, he's called me an idiot and a failure and all these things. Well, Dave Meltzer is not an idiot or a failure. Dave Meltzer knows what draws in the wrestling business. Matt, can I say something to you?
I'm here. Go ahead.
And it took me back because I was a mark. I was a mark. And it was like, it made me look at it like, really? And it made me look at these guys differently. I was doing my show with Disco, Matt, right? And we were talking about the Young Bucks, right? And you know how I say, bro, the marks have made it to the ring, this, that, and the other thing, right? Well, Disco turned around to me and he goes, Vince, I just did a show with the Young Bucks, okay? He says, bro, I'm in the locker room with the Young Bucks. And he goes, Vince, they talk about the marks. They refer to the marks. He says, Vince, they're working the marks. And I was like, holy shit. Like, man, was I wrong, because I'm the one saying the marks. He goes, Vince, no, I was there. I was around them. They're working the marks. They're milking the marks. I saw it with my own eyes. Matt, I think Meltzer's doing the same thing. I think Meltzer has been around a long time. Meltzer knows what draws and what doesn't draw.
Exactly.
But right. now Meltzer has the star rating. You know, I mean, he's got his audience that expects him to say certain things. And once in a while, bro, you'll hear him slip up. And the reason why I'm saying this is because I listen to his clips every week now. And all of a sudden, like every other week, he's saying something like, I agree with. And like, yeah, bro, like, yeah, bro, I'm telling you, he knows what's going on. He knows the deal. He knows what draws. He knows what doesn't draw, but he knows he has to be a certain way for his audience. Now, bro, I can't be that way. Bro, if tomorrow the WWE started being good, I might put myself out of business because I might say this shit is good now. Like I can't do that, bro. I've got to be like honest with you. But the more I listen to this guy, he knows, man. He knows what draws and doesn't draw.
I mean, that can't be a surprise. I mean, when you think of wrestling, you know, it's all about making money. When you think about the Young Bucks they have to sell. They have to work people. We are all working the marks, quote unquote, because we're all trying to make
money. But the only difference is, Matt, I got to tell you, because I just know myself. If the freaking WWE turned that corner tomorrow, I would be putting them over. And people love when I bury them. You know, people love when I pick the shows apart. But if they turn that corner tomorrow, I would put it over.
I'm glad that you see that they're not marks. I mean,
yes, it opened up my eyes when Glenn gave me a firsthand account. I'm like, God, I'm the freaking mark.
To relate it to what we're doing, you know, you have to take advantage of every situation.
Yes.
And this Raw that takes place, which ends the 83 weeks, which gives you the ratings that you want, you put all of it together in an 8-man match to close out the show. It's Austin and LOD 2000 and Undertaker taking on the New Age Outlaws and Triple H and Kane. You know, you come off this hot rating, you turn the corner, and then your idea is not to ignore it, your idea?
Yeah, Matt, here was my philosophy. And, bro, this is so lost in the WWE. And I'm telling you, this was my philosophy. And Ed's. I got to bring Ed along with me. This show has to be better than last week's show. That's it, bro. That was our attitude every single week. I don't care what last week's show was. I don't care what the number was. This week's got to be better. That's how we wrote. That's lost today, bro. They're not looking at that. I mean, they get a piss poor rating on Monday night. They get a piss poor rating on SmackDown. Nobody there is saying next week's show's got to be better than nobody's saying that. Why? Because it's not. So, like, you know, but Matt, I want to bring up one other thing too, because this is a misnomer too. And this is the difference between yesterday and today. Okay, Matt? One of the greatest, as Dutch would say, pieces of business while I was there was the DX parody on The Nation. Okay, I want to tell you how this went down, okay? Because I'm going to show you how this would not happen today. Okay, bro? We get to the building like every other show. I got to get with every talent and let them know what they're doing. Okay, bro? And I probably buzzed them during the week. I'm sure I talked to Triple H about it during the week, whatever. So, bro, we're there that night. I've got DX all there with me now. And I'm like, bro, you guys are going to do a parody on The Nation. Now, Matt, I know this is going to be really good or this is going to be really bad. There's going to be no in between, bro. They're either going to knock this out of the park or it's going to suck. I would not have written that unless I thought they were going to knock it out of the park. I had 100% confidence. So, bro, the conversation is, guys, you guys got to do a parody of Nation tonight, whatever. You know what my direction was to them?
What's that?
Go. Go. I did not say, Hunter, you're this guy. Sean, you're this guy. Brian, you're this guy. This is what you're wearing. You're doing blackface. You're putting a pillow. Nothing. I said, you guys are doing a parody. Go. They had 100% freedom. Freedom, bro, to be creative and do whatever they wanted to do. That would not happen today. And bro, that now they come to me and now they're dressed up and Hunter's got the eyebrow and freaking X-Pac's got the belly and freaking, you know, Brian is doing his head. Bro, that was 1,000% giving the talent the creative, letting them have the freedom. And that's what's missing today.
And we are going to talk about the fallout from that, the criticism of that, as well as the DX invasion of WCW on a future episode when we cover that segment of DX. Too much for one show. I think this episode, which is how the Click and the NWO, in a way, created DX. And when you look at their impact, if you compare the two, DX and NWO, if you were to say, pick a group, Vince, I think you would probably pick DX, right?
Well, I would pick DX, but I would take nothing away from the NWO. Bro, without NWO, there never would have been a DX. Never, ever, ever. Without that influence and without Vince saying, we could do that and we're a lot younger, there never would have been a DX. So I would never in a million years. And I'm talking about the three. I'm talking about the original three members of the NWO. Never in a million years would I ever take anything away from anybody involved in that, ever.
I mean, if you think about DX, Vince, there's only one way they could have gotten more over, and it's the only regret I have that you didn't do it.
What's that?
Put him in a box. We will see you next week on Truth with Consequences.